Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to another episode of our Intersection of Clinical and Administrative Data Task Force. We will be joined by our colleagues at CMS and MITRE today for a presentation on the DRLS. So with that, we'll go ahead and get started with a quick roll call, and we'll jump right into it. Cheryl Turney.
Cheryl Cheer.
Alex Goss.
Present.
Erin Mary. Abby Sears. Alexis Snyder.
Here.
Andy Trescott. Anil Jain.
I'm here.
Great. Erin Malik.
I'm here.
Deb Strickland. Denise Webb.
Here.
Oh, thanks. And I think I saw Gus on the line on the Adobe. Jackie Monson.
Here.
And Jim Georges.
Present.
Jocelyn Keegan.
Here.
Les Leonard. Alex Muggy. Here. And Ram Sriram.
I'm here.
Great. Rich Landon?
He'll be off today.
Okay. Sasha Thurma?
Here.
Great. Steve Brown?
Here.
Great. And Tom Mason?
I'm on.
Okay. Cheryl, I will turn it over to you to get us started.
All right. The Excel spreadsheet's not coming up as a accepted format, and that's why I can't share it. So I apologize, but if Josh is on today, if you wouldn't mind sharing your...
This is Alex Goss. I think we've unfortunately just lost Cheryl, who's indicated in the private chat that she is dialing back in. So let me go ahead and step in here to help her out while she gets herself situated. I can very much commiserate with her dynamic as the system kicked me out on a recent call as well. So for today's meeting, we're going to be, we've already handled roll call and welcome. I want to give you a brief update on our last call before we go into our presentation today from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, who will be giving us a documentation requirement lookup service demonstration and discussion. Then Cheryl, presuming all is well, she will dial back in and continue to facilitate us with the data classes update. And then I'm going to bring us home with a conversation around next steps, some timeline consideration, and some specific work focus for us. And of course, we will have a public comment. So if we could go ahead and jump to one more slide. I'm getting a bit of background noise, and I'm hoping that you're not hearing that, folks. If you are, please let me know. If not, please put yourself on mute. So at the last meeting, we took a deep dive into some of the guiding principles in ideal state work. As you may recall, we had an offline small work group that identified a variety of ideal state and guiding principle consideration. We produced and distributed to the task force members a working document, and then walked through that document for discussion, except for the privacy and security aspects. The goal is that the guiding principles in ideal state will help us with creating recommendations that will go into our report. We are currently still focused on the prior authorization realm. The privacy and security aspect that we carved out was because we have a small working group taking a deep dive into those considerations, and we'll be coming back again soon to give you more update from that work, and also we're incorporating the tremendous feedback we received from the task force on the overarching guiding principles in ideal state. We also then took a detailed look at the Data Classes and Data Elements workbook tab, thanks to Josh and Cheryl and team. We talked a lot about overall code dispositions, burden considerations, and update schedules, with also a focus around business process modeling, and have some discussion related to federal data model alignment. So those efforts are also evolving offline through the small work group and the folks that are participating in that. We wrapped up rather quickly at the last meeting as we were at action-packed discussion, but we had a quick update around our overall timelines. Talking about the realities of over the summer, high tech having a break, that made us pause for a little bit and rethink our timeline for producing, delivering draft recommendations to them, which is a step in the process before we can incorporate and finalize our overall report feedback, which we were expecting to be submitted the final report by the end of September. We're now more likely looking at October. So I'm going to pause there and see if my co-chair Cheryl has returned. And she has.
Yes.
Okay, there you go.
Hey,
technology is great when it works. It's frustrating when it doesn't, and we all get our turn at the gremlins. So I think at this point I've brought us home on the last meeting, Cheryl, and I think we're about ready to turn over to our presenters, if that's okay with you.
Yes, it is. Go right ahead. Thank you, Alex.
You're welcome. So without further ado, I believe that we have a handful of presenters and maybe a few backup resources to assist as questions may emerge. Our presentation today, Ashley Stedding, Nalini Ambrose, and Larry DeSales will be talking us through the slide deck, which was also sent out to the task force members in advance. So without further ado, I believe I'm turning it over to Ashley.
Yes, thank you, Alex, and good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining us today and inviting us to present on the work that CMS is doing in conjunction with the HL7 DaVinci project to develop a Medicare fee-for-service documentation requirement lookup service prototype. And we're certainly hopeful that this group will find the content that we share today to be helpful and informative to the objectives of this task force. So before we dive in, I'll do some brief introductions. My name is Ashley Stedding. I'm a management analyst, and I work in the Provider Compliance Group at the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. And then also, I am the government task lead for this initiative. Also with me today are two members from the MITRE team that is assisting CMS with this initiative. That is Nalini Ambrose, who is the project lead, and Larry DeSales, who is the technical lead for the DRLS project. Next slide. The objective of this presentation is to provide education on CMS's Documentation Requirement Lookup Service Initiative, known as DRLS for short, and its role as a precursor to many important clinician activities related to providing items and services for patients. Following this presentation, you should have a better understanding of the reasoning behind the development of DRLS, how clinicians are intended to use it, and what technologies enable it, as well as the lessons learned along the way, the current status of the DRLS prototype development, and next steps. And next slide. So to kick things off, I'm just going to spend a couple of minutes sharing some background information on why CMS is interested in this initiative and give a quick overview of the DRLS. So why is CMS interested in this initiative? Throughout a number of provider listening sessions, CMS has been hearing feedback from providers saying that documentation requirements are too hard to find. For Medicare, as well as other payers, documentation requirements often appear in various locations, and this causes burden to those providers who must navigate the various websites to find those coverage requirements, including both documentation and prior authorization requirements. CMS has also heard repeated suggestions that payers should publicly disclose their requirements in a searchable electronic format and clearly communicate to prescribing and ordering providers what supporting documentation is needed. So this initiative is really one of the steps that CMS is taking towards displaying our Medicare fee-for-service rules in an electronic format that will be easily accessible to providers from within their actual clinical workflow. Next slide. In the interest of time, I won't go into this slide in great detail, but at a high level, we just wanted to share some additional context to the reasoning behind the development of the DRLS and to show a small sample of the supplemental improper payment report data from CMS, supporting the logic behind some of the initial topics selected for DRLS full set development, which we'll touch on a little bit more later in the slides, but these include items like oxygen and CPAP, which you can see here were the leading items in total contribution to the 2019 DMEPOS improper payment rates for durable medical equipment items. Next slide. So the Medicare fee-for-service DRLS prototype is software that will allow the providers to discover our Medicare fee-for-service prior authorization and documentation requirements right at the time of service and right within their electronic health record or integrated practice management system, as opposed to, you know, going out to different websites you know, outside of their actual regular clinical workflow. So essentially, the DRLS prototype is introducing automation to what is currently a largely manual process by streamlining workflow access to those coverage requirements. And we strongly believe this automation will provide significant time efficiencies to the process of discovering prior authorization and documentation requirements right at the time of service, thereby helping to ultimately reduce provider burden, reduce improper payments and appeals, and improve provider-to-payer information exchange. Next slide. So this image here shows how the DaVinci project use cases, coverage requirements discovery, or CRD, and documentation templates and coverage rules, or DTR, how those two use cases make up the DRLS prototype. So coverage requirements discovery is represented by the top two blue arrows that you see there. And this allows the provider in their clinical workflow to ask the payer the question of, is there anything I need to know or do to support this planned treatment? For example, is prior authorization required? Are there certain documentation requirements that I need to comply with? The payer will then answer back, no specific requirements are needed, or yes, in which case it includes additional information such as, you need specific documentation in the medical record to support the demonstration of medical necessity or appropriateness, and this item requires prior authorization, or no, this item does not require prior authorization. And then documentation templates and coverage rules, or DTR, is the second set of blue arrows on the bottom of this slide, which allows the provider to actually pull down the payer rules, in our case, Medicare fee-for-service rules, which show the provider what needs to be documented in the clinical record to support that particular service or item that is being considered or ordered by the provider. So at this point, I'm going to hand off to Larry to discuss the standards and technologies behind DRLS.
Thanks, Ashley. Hi, everybody. So let's take a look at what's going on under the DRLS hood, kind of take a little deeper dive into what Ashley kind of presented as far as CRD and DTR. This workflow that you're looking at is one example used to help illustrate the DRLS APIs and may not directly map to your particular workflow, but it's meant to, you know, kind of show a little bit of the technology we're using. The first three blue rectangles shown in the slide are used to determine if documentation and or prior auth requirements, if there are prior auth requirements for coverage. For example, a DME nurse might order some durable medical equipment like home oxygen therapy. The EHR would allow the ordering of home oxygen therapy. The EHR would then compose a Firebase message to be used when calling coverage requirements and discovery, shown in the third light blue box above, also known as CRD. CRD then runs rules to determine if there is documentation or prior auth requirements for coverage. In this scenario, a response is sent back to the DME nurse or EHR in the form of a CVS Hooks card saying there are documentation requirements. In the CVS Hooks card, there is a link that would allow the DME nurse to launch a smart app, also known as Document Templates and Rules, to retrieve templates and rules from a remote repository. Currently, DRLS supports three repository APIs, CDS Connect, a GitHub API, and a local storage API. Assuming the DME nurse wants to fill out the required documentation, the DME nurse would click the Smart App link, which would retrieve the rules and template and populate a Firebase questionnaire. Then the DME nurse would manually populate fields that did not get populated. The DME nurse then would save the Firebase questionnaire back to the HR. At this point, the questionnaire response could be sent to any ancillary service like a DME fulfillment service, a payer service, and or a service to get a prior auth number. Next slide, please. All right, now we're going to get into a little bit of how the current prior authorization works. Next slide, please. So DRLS is made up of two HL7 DaVinci use cases. DaVinci is an HL7 fire accelerator. A fire accelerator is designed to assist communities and collaborative groups across the global healthcare spectrum in the creation and adoption of high-quality fire implementation guides and standard artifacts to move toward the realization of global health data interoperability. So up above CRD, as Ashley had mentioned earlier, it allows the provider's EHR to ask the payer system if there is prior auth and or documentation requirement, receiving a yes or no. And then DTR, Document Templates and Rules, enables the EHR to request and receive documents, templates, and rules from the payer system. It then pre-populates the required documentation. So DRLS is comprised of CRD and DTR. So the combination of those two use cases within DaVinci are what make up DRLS. CRD and DTR are foundational use cases in the DaVinci electronic prior auth process. PAS is an ancillary use case that is dependent on CRD and DTR or the equivalent. For example, CRD and DTR are currently used by DaVinci payers and other vendors to gather required documentation in a Firebase format in order to get a prior auth number and or X12 translation via PAS. Next slide, please. Next slide, please. I'm not sure if it's slow or I'm not seeing it for some reason.
Larry, actually, I'm seeing a DRLS in the clinician workflow present.
Okay. It's just not showing up in my screen. That's fine.
Thank you.
No worries. So this is just another recap of the flow. I won't get into it in a lot of detail, but essentially a clinician would initiate DRLS with entry into the HR to identify the Medicare fee-for-service payer coverage and prior auth documentation. If it's required, if coverage or prior auth documentation is required, DRLS returns yes, stating what is required and providing a link to the request. When clicking the link again, DRLS retrieves required rules and the EHR extracts existing patient data. Clinician manually enters missing information and completes the documentation. So this is just more of a graphical view of that. Next slide, please. So we'll go over some of the testing and of DRLS standards. Next slide, please. If you could, my screen isn't changing. So if you could go to
we're on a timeline slide, the DRLS implementation guides and connectathons visual.
Perfect. Yep. That's it. Perfect.
Yeah.
As part of the DaVinci Accelerator, we participate in connectathons and HIMSS interoperability showcases. These are the events we have participated over the past few years. This is where we test and pilot CRD and DTR reference implementation in order to show that the implementation guides are correct and well-designed. We've also developed and validated the DTR implementation guide. For those who don't know, an implementation guide is a set of guidelines about how fire resources are used and or should be used to solve a problem with associated documentation to support and clarify usage. The reference implementation is a standard from which all other implementations and corresponding customizations are derived from. So you can see above, we've attended several connectathons over the past couple years, and HIMSS, and also some of the balloting that goes on. So it's quite a process as far as developing a standard and pushing it through the HL7 process. So next slide, please. Okay, so these are actually links, assuming you're seeing the slide that says CRD and DTR reference links. These are live links if folks have access to the slide deck. Each use case, CRD and DTR, have their implementation guides. They have a link to the source code, which would be the reference implementation, and links to Confluence artifacts, which are all the information about the individual use cases that DaVinci holds. And it's from the beginning when it, kind of a concept to where it is now, so you can read up on the status and where it's been and where it's going in that regard. Next slide, please. So this is the DRLS rule sets for pilot testing. So on the DRLS project, we're building up a bunch of several rule sets, and within CMS, we call them topics. So I had mentioned earlier home oxygen therapy, and I won't read this whole list, but it's quite an array of pulmonary type topics, home health services. So you get a service there. We're home oxygen therapy as a DME item. We're just getting into immunosuppressive drugs, so we're handling medication requests, and so it's a lot of mapping of data and mapping of rules to that data and the templates that are involved. Next slide, please. So this is similar to a slide that you saw before. It basically is showing CRD, which is the top two arrows, and DTR, the bottom two arrows. And this basically shows how we test it in some of our connectathons and at HIMSS. The number one is basically a point-to-point test where it would be one provider and one payer. Number two would be multi-payer, would be one provider and multiple payers. And then the third is where we get a real clinician involved to really help us understand and accept the workflow and design of DRLS, and try to understand. It's kind of an acceptance test for the provider. And that's it. Now I'm going to hand it over to Nelanie Ambrose.
Great. Thanks, Larry. Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to, if we could advance to the next slide, please. I would like to speak a little to some of the stakeholder engagement efforts that we've been involved in for DRLS. And we've seen that industry participation has been such a critical part of our work. And so we've engaged industry partners through the convening of a DRLS stakeholder leadership group. We've gotten a lot of great feedback from the leadership group. It's a group that's comprised of more than 50 members, both from government as well as from commercial industry, including commercial payers, healthcare providers, EHR vendors, et cetera. And they have really been a very engaged group. We've seen a lot of success with this group. We do have a couple of co-chairs who are leading this group from industry. We have a physician from a provider group and a key stakeholder from a commercial payer group. And they've really driven this work forward. And we are getting a lot of feedback about what they see as their needs in a digital solution like DRLS. And on a smaller basis, we are also conducting a DRLS work group that is a smaller subset of the larger group that conducts some focused working sessions targeting on some specific topics. We've seen feedback related to topics such as alignment of requirements across the board, data element standardization, integration with clinical workflows, et cetera. So this has helped build a lot of awareness about DRLS, but not just that, also to obtain that ongoing feedback and input on how DRLS might be developed and pilot tested in the future. Next slide, please. So we've learned some key lessons in the past 2 years of DRLS development and testing. We started in June of 2018. So we've compiled a list of lessons learned here, both from a CMS engagement perspective as well as from a stakeholder engagement perspective. The primary lessons we learned from a CMS engagement perspective is that DRLS is really seen as a very critical and important first step in building and enhancing interoperability between provider systems and payer systems, and in this case, the CMS Medicare fee-for-service system, in order to improve data exchange related to prior authorization requirements. And in collaborations with HL7, the Da Vinci project, which acts as a fire accelerator, as Larry pointed out, we see that as being a key vehicle and mode to help move interoperability progress faster in industry and to keep that engine moving in an expedited way. And we also found that in order for the DRLS initiative to maintain that momentum in industry, that sustained leadership is needed. There's a strong governance process that's seen as needed. And in addition, in developing the prototype itself, we found that an iterative and incremental development of DRLS really has allowed for ongoing improvements over time. So with our engagement in HL7 Connectathons and other pilot testing efforts and stakeholder engagement efforts, we've really seen enhancements to the DRLS software prototype itself. And you can see the common factor across all of these lessons learned is that CMS is really seen as a key driver and collaborator in all of these efforts. And the DRLS work could potentially be leveraged across multiple programs that CMS is currently engaged in and other initiatives for better alignment with the interoperability standards that are currently being used. And we spoke to several stakeholder leadership group members and pilot test participants who all articulated that they see CMS as really a champion and leader in this effort in moving DRLS forward in their collaboration with industry and to get the standards to a tipping point or a level of maturity where industry can then pick up and adopt for future DRLS implementation. Next slide, please. So again, lessons learned from a stakeholder engagement perspective. We found that there are still EHR vendors who are not up to par with the current functionality that's needed. As Larry laid out, the prototype is being developed with FHIR R4. And we are currently working with pilot testing with some providers and EHR systems that do have version of FHIR that is supported by DRLS, and we've recently moved to supporting solely FHIR R4. And we see that the recent interoperability rules by ONC and CMS will really help move that needle forward in health IT systems, embracing these current versions of FHIR that will then help deploy DRLS faster in industry. And we see that continued pilot testing of DRLS is really critical to this effort because we are seeing growing functionality in the industry for these standards and for newer versions of the standards. So continued pilot testing is really seen as critical for standards to reach that level of maturity. And we found that clinicians and providers are a key industry player in this group. As Larry pointed out, we are working toward clinician acceptance testing, which has included clinician assessments of how DRLS would fit within their clinical workflow without impeding their interactions with their patients at the point of service and care. And we also heard through our stakeholder work group members that clinicians really need to understand the value proposition of the DRLS solution, how it would potentially reduce burden at their end. And so we have been looking at making some recommendations related to the provision of future incentives and really building DRLS with that end goal in mind. And again, we heard across the board the need for collaborative working on a solution for clinicians, EHR vendors, and others to really come together to the table to solve this problem in a collaborative and interactive way. Next slide, please. So there are just three main factors we see at an overarching level for continuing DRLS. One is to establish that solid state for DRLS and establish a solid foundation for the standards to continue developing and maturing, and to make sure we're maintaining that momentum and interest among industry stakeholders, and also to obtain early and ongoing feedback, which we saw as very critical. Next slide, please. So in order to continue DRLS development, just to sum up, next slide, please. We see four main components for continued development. The first is standards development, as we talked about, continuing the development of the coverage requirements, discovery, and the documentation templates and rules, implementation guides, and reference implementations through 2021 following the current HL7 balloting process. And also continued rule set development. As Larry showed, we are in the process of developing 10 rule sets, but there are various other rule sets that need to be developed in order to get to a point where DRLS could be deployed in industry. Pilot testing, again, is a critical part of this work. And last but not the least, continued stakeholder engagement we see is really crucial to the successful implementation and adoption of DRLS in the future. So with that, I'll hand it back to you, Ashley, to wind up, and if we have time for questions and answers.
Yes, thanks, Nellie. I know we're just a minute away from 3:40 when our presentation was supposed to wrap up, so I'm not sure. Do we have
time? We're going to take Q&A. Yeah, Ashley, okay. We're going to do that. I was just writing a note to the team. So please go ahead, do your wrap-up. Cheryl and I have already orchestrated offline. We're going to be flexible with the agenda because we certainly want the opportunity for some Q&A dialogue after your super presentation today.
Okay, yeah. I mean, that pretty much wraps it up. If there are folks that, you know, think of questions after the fact or don't want to speak up on the call, we do have our CMS mailbox address listed on this slide, as well as the link to our cms.gov webpage. And this time, I guess we're happy to open it up for questions, if there are any.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Ashley. Yeah, so the way this works is I'm going to kind of MC us through questions. We'll have members that raise their hands. I've already gotten in the queue. We'll call on them sequentially, and we'll take Cheryl, are we good for about, do you think, 10 minutes or so based upon?
Yes.
Okay,
I
awesome.
I think we're good for 10 minutes.
Sweet. So Jocelyn Keegan is up first in the queue. Your question, madam?
Well, two-parter for me. I want to say thank you. And Larry, Nalini, and Ashley, you guys did a great job today. I can't understate the importance and the contributions that CMS and the MITRE team have made on DaVinci. They've been there since the beginning, and you can see the work progress. Not just in this presentation, but in the fact that, you know, Kirk Anderson from Cambia and Patrick Murda from Humana are all building on the same base to put this out into production. So thank you guys so much. I have a couple of specific questions that I feel like out of touch that I haven't talked to you guys in a while, but I guess maybe a couple, like when we look at implementations, are you guys actually piloting now? Are there people alive with this, or are you still in the pilot planning phase?
Yeah. Hi, Jocelyn. Yes, this is Larry. We had a pilot going with Rush Medical University out of Chicago, And then the COVID crisis hit, and they kind of pretty much that was put on hold. And we had plans to pilot with a few other vendors, and we're still having talk, or a few other providers, and we're still talking with them. That was as far as we've gotten so far with our pilots.
Okay, awesome. Thanks. But you have actually gotten it to pilot. That's great. And then I guess the follow-on to that is one of the important points about building the standards is this concept of testing. And I guess, are you guys leveraging the existing testing tools to certify the API itself? Because I know you guys are in an interesting seat, right, that you're driving sort of the maturity of the IG as sort of the owners of it from a project team perspective, but you're also implementers. And I didn't know if you had been sort of exercising sort of people's compliance with these emerging standards.
Yeah, we, wherever possible, we try to use some of the newer tools. I'll give you one example. There's a new tool called Fire Shorthand that MITRE developed under the umbrella of HL7. And we're one that's been something that hasn't been easy for folks developing IGs over the last couple of years, and so we're taking a hard look at that. It's getting a really good acceptance in the HL7 Firebase community right now, so we're taking a look at that. And then other tools, you know, of course, we're using Aegis Touchstone wherever else we're trying to leverage some of the tools that we can.
So we'll be able to see that consistency and implementation that somebody literally could.
Yep, in other areas.
Yeah, to another.
Exactly. And one thing we're doing too is, and we're trying to, because we're building a lot of rule sets, and one thing we're doing is we're using, there's an NLM tool that's used to build out the questionnaires. And then we're looking at the CDS authoring tool to build out the CQL. And what that'll do is give us a somewhat consistent look and feel for the rule set that we're developing. And then kind of a next step would to kind of come out with common pieces of our rule sets that can be reused by other folks as needed.
Awesome. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, thanks so very much for that. Next in the queue is Arian, and then I think Cheryl is after Arian.
Hey, thank you. So great minds think alike. I was going to ask the same question on pilots. So if I'm understanding you correctly, you were in the middle of setting up a pilot and then were sort of on hold in pilots. So the intent is maybe post-COVID crisis to get back into a true product. When you talk pilots, are you talking production pilots? You're actually using this in workflow to address end-to-end PA for respiratory DME? Or when you talk pilots, are you talking about going through a mock simulation end-to-end?
Yeah, it's not production yet, but our pilots are as close to production as possible. So these are most right now development environments.
Got it.
But we're working with real EHRs. Ideally, in a future pilot, we'd be doing more end to end. Working with maybe real PHI, so to speak, and that type of thing.
I got it. Okay, perfect. Thank you. And then you said you're dependent on R4. Most of the deployed world has been R2 because that's kind of what Argonaut got started with back in the day and what Apple has endorsed too. So as we complete the system upgrade to R4, that's an ecosystem dependency for you guys?
Yeah, we built out two of our rule sets with SDU3. All of our new stuff we're going to build towards the new R4 4.01. DSTU2, depending on where we're integrating, we're actually working out now. We're working out an integration with Cerner, and a lot of their stuff is DSTU2. So
yep.
We have some of that capability, but the new we're not going to remove the older DSTU. To SDU3 code, we're just going to all new development will be R4.
Got it. Again, and I think just for the rest of the task force, kind of the backstory here is that Argonaut got started. We were in an R2 world. Most of the deployed footprint for Firebase APIs was deployed around R2. And then R3 came out. Most people decided to skip it and then go to R4. So we're in the middle of sort of a broad-scale upgrade. And then the preconditions for getting this capability to work is primarily that folks have implemented to decision support hooks. Is that right? Or are there other preconditions that are foundational?
Yeah, that's part of CRD. We currently support the order sign hook and order select hook. Those are the two newer hooks. We have order review and medication request. Those have been deprecated, you might know, but we still support that. We're just moving forward. It'll be probably deprecated in our code.
Yeah, got it. Okay, so there's some preconditions for implementing decision support hooks, and then some preconditions in terms of what sort of triggers are supported. Okay, fantastic. And then how are you assembling your network? You're basically going party by party, health system by health system, to look at who wants to volunteer, and then working with their EHR vendor to implement to your specification. Is that kind of the way it's working right now?
Yeah. Nellen, you might want to did you want to talk about some of our pilot research and pilot participant research? You might be better to respond to that.
Sure. Happy to, Larry. So, yes, we did. Last year, under the aegis of HL7, we actually surveyed a lot of the EHR vendors and provider systems and associations and so on, asking about their current functionality and asking about their interest in potential pilot participation. We also conduct special open door forums sponsored by CMS, and where there is, essentially a net cast out for pilot participants, we've received interest there. We've also focused on DaVinci, HL7 DaVinci members, and used the members to essentially connect us with other healthcare systems that may have the current functionality to move us forward. And so we have a good solid list of potential pilot participants for the first round. And as Larry pointed out, we've engaged with several of these provider groups and EHR vendor systems. And we've looked at a combination of, larger systems versus smaller clinician practices, larger EHR vendors versus smaller vendors, different geographical areas and so on. So there's some criteria for selecting potential participants. But if you are aware of other participants, please feel free to let us know, and we're happy to connect with them.
Got it. Thank you. Thank you. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, Cheryl, I think you had your hand up, and it's if you have a question, great. You don't? Okay. So we have one last question that came in the chat box from Raj about whether or not you're planning to share the rule set.
Yeah, good question. It's open source, so certainly we will be sharing those. And as we develop, they're out there on the internet now on GitHub. If you're familiar with GitHub, it's actually so you can click the links that we have in the deck, and you can where it says reference implementation, and you can drill right through to the DaVinci. It's basically DaVinci's the kind of the root repository in GitHub, and then you can get all those rule sets.
Awesome, terrific. Raj appreciates that answer as well. He's in the chat box. So this has been a really great presentation. It's another view of how the marketplace is advancing our ability to interact related to prior authorization, medical necessity, type coverage requests using emerging technologies, and builds out the presentations that we've had so far, and we'll have a couple more over the next month. But without further ado, would like to suggest say thank you to our presenters and turn it over to Cheryl Turney to take us into the next portion of our agenda related to data classes.
Thank you so much, Alex. And with all hope, my phone won't get disconnected this time. So I am sharing. Can we go to the next screen with what I'm sharing? Can you guys see it?
However, we're not sharing. Okay, I think they're trying to bring it up now. Okay.
No, they're trying to bring it up now, yeah.
Right, and so and I just as a point of reference, can you see any of the Adobe Connect boxes?
Yes.
If not, okay, good. Thank you.
I can, but I can't. Right now it's still saying stop sharing, but I can't actually see what's being shared.
Because we're...
All right, can
I
you see
think...
the... Can you see
Did
the
you just scroll?
Now?
Yeah, patient identity, patient demographics, insurance plan.
Okay, perfect. All right, so I want to start here. In our meeting last week, we talked about the definitions that were added to many of the data classes. There were a few questions that were raised, and so we went in and added some narrative related to those. One was patient identity. We had added a question in terms of, are there any data elements specific to patient identity that must be shared between constituents specific to a prior auth request? Or is this information about a member beneficiary sufficient for purposes of prior auth? No one has gone in and added any notes related to this. I can at least add from a payer perspective, you know, what is required in terms of patient identity, but it would be good from those that are more aware of, especially some of the prior auths that we were talking about for medical devices, which I think in particular may require patient information that may be different would be helpful here would be great to add. What I did is, since we met last, and I'll go back so you can actually see it, but we added a few additional classes, and one of them was a prior authorization response. And one of the things I wanted to bring up is, if you look at the picture that CMS just brought up with the DRLS and the CRD that back and forth, in our prior authorization HL7 meetings that we're having, and those are happening every week as well, we talk about those use cases because they're the basis for, you know, everything that's done with prior auth, even beyond the CMS work. But I specifically actually questioned whether or not we needed something specific for this in the DaVinci model. And the response that I received last week was that if we have and send a request, if it's still pended, we're going to get back a response that basically allows the clinician to know whether it's been approved, denied, or pended. Now, it's not going to give you a status unless you put in the request to check on that status, so it's not like going to be automatic, but that functionality is present in the way in which the use cases have been designed based on the DaVinci use cases. So I wasn't 100% sure the best way to represent that. But what I define this to be is the information provided by the payer in response to a provider request regarding the treatment, procedure, service, or product for which the prior authorization was requested. The response could be an acknowledgement of receipt of the request, which could happen via the one of the transactions, an X12 transaction, or a request from the payer for additional information from the provider. It could be an approval or it could be a denial. So that's what it is, but it doesn't necessarily mean that we have to utilize a separate use case in order to get this status. But we called it out so that we as a work group would realize there has to be functionality to support the status, and we would then have to determine how we would want to move that forward. If we say, well, we want to, you know, somehow accelerate the pilots for DaVinci so that these services, which are already existing in the DaVinci use case models, can be more widely adopted more quickly. Does that make sense? Okay, so the next one was the prior authorization rules. Also, this is covered based on what we just saw in the CMS request, and I wish I could flip quickly over to that slide, but that's not the way this data sharing thing works. So, but there's a slide there as well that basically either brings back the rule or brings back the documentation requirement. And what we defined this to be was the information provided by the payer regarding the coverage rules, which the prior authorization requester must satisfy in order to obtain approval. So that's what this category of data is. And then again, we need to populate over here to the right how that would be delivered or what state that is currently in relative to some of the work that's already being done by CMS and by HL7 and DaVinci, because part of this do exist. There also was some discussion on the HL7 meeting last week about one of the vendors who they mentioned earlier today, who is doing some work to actually make these rules more available as an add-in to the EMR systems. And again, I don't know if we want to speak to that in our recommendations related to how that would work, but that's also something that does exist out there that we should at least be aware of and acknowledge. The next one was the prior authorization data requirements. And so this I defined as the information provided by the payer regarding the data required to be submitted by the provider, detailing the data required to be supplied to the payer to support the PA decision. So I probably can reword that one. I think I worded that one awkwardly, but if anyone has any suggestions, please let me know. Otherwise, I'll try to improve that one so it's a little bit more clear and efficient. I'm just going to take a pause. Are there any questions about what we've added to the definitions? And I think there was one more, which was down here, which is the reason for denial. This was the response from the payer to provider indicating the specifics of what elements of the predefined rule were not met and why, allowing the provider to have insights to improve their processes to either avoid seeking authorizations that do not meet the rule criteria, avoiding unnecessary administrative work, or to ensure appropriate capture for items that do get approved, avoiding administrative costs and burden of appeals and rework. And that one we actually discussed quite a bit last week, so I did want to call it out. And then I added, we updated the prior auth status, which includes information related to the status of the prior auth, which really is the second half of the one above, which is the request for the status. This is just the response. And then the prior auth appeal, which is the additional information provided by the provider to the payer, satisfying the requirements specified in the prior auth response data class, such as documentation supporting medical necessity, history of past treatments provided, clinical diagnoses, and responding to any gaps identified by the payer or supplemental information required. So these are the things that changed from our last meeting. And so now, please weigh in.
Okay, so Cheryl, at this point, I see one hand raised so far. Alexis?
Alexis?
Hi. Yes. So I don't see any of the pieces we talked about transparency and information to the patient in that flow. And then I also don't see a piece where we talked about if a PA is denied. We had some wording in there about clear documentation for the denial and not just necessarily a miscellaneous code.
Patient transparency. All right, so let me add that so we work on that for next week, Alexis. And then let me go up to the denial. Hold on a second. All right, so here we need to add the requirement to have a complete explanation and not a general code.
And that's across the board. That's part of the transparency as well, because EOBs and explanations come to the patient as well, and they quite often have a 999 miscellaneous code.
Okay. I captured both of those. We do have another opportunity to discuss these coming up in the next couple of weeks.
Okay, we just discussed them in great detail and added a bunch of stuff that's no longer there. So that was my question. So there's still a lot of patient transparency throughout the process. That's not there anymore.
I don't know what happened then, because it wasn't there when I went out and worked in the workbook.
So we need to circle back around.
Yeah.
Well, folks, keep in mind that we're in the data classes tab, not the guiding principles and ideal state section, which we've actually taken out of this portion, and we're not using that tab. We're using a Word document, so please don't muddy the waters by going to that tab, because we've transformed that work.
Data classes.
Yeah, I think that's what happened. I think that's where you're looking for it, Alexis. And it wasn't in this tab to begin with.
It's not, but we can talk about that offline. I'm talking about data classes.
Okay. Yes, because Alexis is actually playing in both work groups now, because we're on a hiatus with the large guiding principles and ideal state discussion. We take the small.
No, I'm not in the data class group, Alex. I'm not in it. It was on the call for the full task force last week. Yeah.
Got it. I'm sorry for the confusion.
Yeah. That's okay.
You're the data modeling. All right. So Jim Jiris, bring us home with the last question, and then we'll pivot to next steps.
Yeah, it's along the lines of what she was just saying about when there's a denial. I think we should be more explicit in the reason for denial than just saying not allowing a miscellaneous code, because the denial should articulate. We should be precise to say that the denial should demonstrate either what data was missing and what rule was violated that led to the denial, instead of some super category that doesn't mean anything to anybody. I'd hate to have people just rename miscellaneous to something equally abstract. I think that the reason for denial should be tied to the rules and what didn't meet the rules specifically.
I think that's clear, and I added that note. Unfortunately, I just want to clarify this, because I don't have access to the Google Doc. I had to copy this down, so you won't see these back there until later.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I thought you were changing things, and it wasn't happening.
No, I can't. My work firewalls us off from it, so I have to incorporate these later. All right.
I think we're good. It looks like Alexis was supporting Jim's point, so let's go ahead and pivot to the back to the regular slide deck. We're going to talk a little bit about timelines and then next steps with making sure that we have time for public comment, which will put up those details in probably about 10 minutes or so for those in the public that would like to make some comment, so you have the appropriate instructions. But first, let's go ahead and talk about our ICAD task force timeline. As I noted at the beginning of the call, we had a little bit of epiphany around our availability to present to HITACH over the summer during their hiatus and realized that that was sort of a gift because we have the ability to add a few more presentations from the marketplace to help us with our broader thinking around the prior authorization activities and also to get some, you know, thinking about workflows and EHR integration and operating rules and granularity of messages. So we have had a number of contacts and idea generation to support presentations being scheduled over the next month or so. As you can see on the screen, we are looking to have AHIP present an update on their piloting effort. At next week's call, we may have another presentation. If not, we'll be jumping into some other content discussions. We think we may also be able to have a presentation on the 16th, but we're leaving those as TBDs until we get confirmation. But we are slated on the 16th to have the privacy and security ideal state and guiding principle discussion. We've had a short run of meetings that are going to produce content for presentation and to be incorporated into the Word document that we've already been reviewing. So we'll likely give you some updates on that larger document in addition to the privacy and security content that Jackie and I have been working on with Denise and Rom and a few others who I'm going to forget off the top of my head. So following the June 16th mid-month touch base, we're looking to have a HEMA and CAQH core present to us. And then on the 30th, we'll look at process mapping discussions and a little bit more about, I think, the integrated federal data model discussion and alignment that we started last week. July 7th, we hope we'll be able to wrap up the data classes and the overarching ideal state and guiding principles. And if we haven't already started some recommendation brainstorming, we'll take a deep dive into that. Mid-July, we're going to pivot to the convergence of clinical and administrative data, really taking the work that we've done with the exemplar of prior authorization and start to bring it up to a larger level of focus and abstract to the areas we think we need to consider as a part of our upcoming report. To that end, we're going to need to start to develop those draft recommendations, not only for prior auth, but also the larger intersection conversation. We have on the Google Doc spreadsheet created a tab, and I've been updating it related to an outline for the report format. We will need to figure out how to divide and conquer on creating the report, but we feel like in June and July we'll have a lot of good content developed that will help give us a framework that we can start to write towards. We think that by August 4th, we can start to have a full set of tasks of recommendations, at least in a draft form, enabling us to iterate through that in August. And then on September 9th, to present those draft recommendations to HITACH for feedback, enabling us then in the month of September to start recording or start incorporating those that feedback and producing our final report and submission on October 21st to HITACH. That is the overall timeline. I want to talk a little bit about next steps and then open it up for some questions and discussion. We are definitely going to need everybody to roll up their sleeves and give feedback on the workbook. We will need membership support on the outline of the report and the initial recommendations. I've already talked about sort of what's coming up in the queue, and that really this coming month is focused on a variety of presentations and really taking all the work we've done so far and producing the first set of discrete and concrete prior authorization related recommendations, because you guys are probably, hopefully you can still hear me, but I have now just lost my connection to the network, so I can't see any of the control panels or manage Q&A. Cheryl, now it's your turn to jump in.
I will. Don't worry.
Awesome. Thank you. Without further ado, I think probably we should open it up for questions, and whether it's on the timeline slide or on the next step slide, which I happen to have already open on my desktop, so I'm happy to take questions along with Cheryl.
All right, so hopefully people will have some questions. I don't see anybody's hands raised right now.
So I think one of the things that's important to, that we all factor into this timeline is that we did a checkpoint about 2 months ago to say, do we need to look at our schedule differently? How do we be respectful of what's happening in the landscape with COVID and the demands on our schedules? And we thought we should continue on a weekly basis. We thought that we could still make our target. We've got a little bit of breathing room with the extra months. But we still have a lot of work to do, folks. And I want to be considerate of the summer months that people may be taking time off. So hopefully that folks can start to think about what their summer schedules look, take a look at the workbook in the report outline, and think about where you want to play in drafting sections of the report, or helping to create an outline of a section of report, or even specific recommendations. That offline work has been tremendously helpful in advancing the effort. We all have an opportunity to continue to influence the trajectory, because as you know, I'm extremely interested in having this time be different, and that we really make concrete recommendations that can be acted upon and reduce burden and increase efficiency and the quality of experience for the patients. I have now returned to the land of Adobe panels.
Okay. Still not seeing any hands raised. I mean, one of the things we could also talk about, Alex, because we have a little bit of time before our public comment, is volunteers who might want to start talking about the sections of information that should be covered in the final report, because we definitely are going to need some help with the writing of the report. So if there are stakeholders on the meeting today who would be like to volunteer, we can at least start aligning those folks to different parts of the work that we would like to get done. I think Arian's got his hand raised.
Yeah, thank you. I am more than willing to volunteer on the end state and, that level of work. One thing that we haven't talked about as a task force are policy levers. We've talked a lot about, what this should look like, and we've talked a lot about a current state landscape. I don't know if that's in our remit or not, but it, in my experience, policy levers make the world go round.
I don't know if we lost Alex, but I think
Alex is here, but I feel like we just lost Arian. Did you finish?
No, I did finish. I said policy levers make the world go round, and then I dropped Mike.
Okay.
I think that's an excellent point, and I do think we need to devote some time to talk about policy levers and make sure that's a topic on one of our future meetings, Alex.
Got it. Thank you so very much.
We have one more question from Jocelyn before we go to the public comment.
No, I was just going to volunteer to help work on what the outline of the report should look like.
Fabulous. Two volunteers.
All right. So maybe what we'll do is we'll start forming a small group, and we'll Cheryl and I can chat with that when we always have a debrief after these calls. So we'll start to think about that and engage with the volunteers. And thanks so very much. You both have been already volunteering quite a bit, and appreciate your time and ongoing support.
Exactly. Do we want to put up the public slide for public comment?
Sure. I also put the phone number in the chat box. So while we get the slide pulled up, operator, if we can open the public line.
Yes. If you would like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. If you would like to remove your comment from the queue, you may press star 2. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. One moment while we poll for comments. There are no comments at this time.
Okay. Alex and Cheryl, I'll let you know if any others come through.
So, Alex, I don't know if you wanted to add any other commentary to next steps, but I do think we would be, you know, it's not too soon, as Jocelyn and Arian have already volunteered to step forward. You can participate. I think what we had talked about doing in terms of the final paper is, which I think will help us in these meetings also, because we're going to probably take quite some time to develop the content for that paper, is to start working on what should be included in each of the various sections, and that will also help ensure that we've included all those topics in our general discussion and that we have multiple iterations, because we have lots of people taking notes, but, you know, as even was evidenced today, not everything is captured the way the participants intended the first time. So we want to provide ample opportunities for you to see and ingest all of the you know, work that we are doing and putting forward, and then be able to massage those papers. And time does fly. I mean, here we're already in June, and you know, time is ticking. So we want to make sure that we have ample time in order to develop recommendations, outline what the various levers are, you know, in terms of moving the agenda forward, and then specifically what we're going to try to recommend. We haven't even really started talking about those recommendations. The other group that has been working offline, I know the privacy group that, you know, Alex probably touched upon in the beginning, is still working to develop their material to present, and then also the group that was working on the process models. And there's been a lot of discussion going on in terms of what those process models will look like. It's a couple weeks off, but I do want to indicate that, you know, that work has started, and folks are spending time on trying to make sure that what's presented is the most useful for this group to process and be able to comment on and help move our work forward. Any other questions or comments at this time? Alex, I don't know if you wanted to add anything.
I don't. I think you summarized it. I think the ongoing support of the members is great. You know, I really think that we'll look to create a small working group with Jocelyn and Arian and look for other volunteers that might want to help with that sort of report framing, brainstorming, kind of getting us going on the policy levers as well. So if you're game to play there and influence the starting point for subsequent discussions, I highly encourage you to raise your hand or reach out or send an email. We'll certainly include you. Otherwise, we'll go ahead and get going with the small group and maybe not feel shy about volunteering.
That sounds good. Any other any public comments have come in?
No, Catherine just indicated in the chat box that none other ones have just come in. So I think what we do is we give everybody back 8 minutes of their day.
I love that.
Thanks, everyone. Right. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Thanks, all.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.